In this episode of Startups the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to do a business model breakdown of Amazon Go. This is Startups the Rest of Us, episode 320. Welcome to Startups the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Rob?
Well, as soon as our predictions episode went live a couple weeks ago, we had a few comments to get posted into that thread. And it looks like at least one and perhaps two of my predictions have literally came true within weeks of us making them. The predictions episode went live on, what, the 6th or 7th of December, but we actually recorded it 2 weeks prior to that. And one of my predictions was that there would be at least one more high-profile, bootstrapped startup self-funded acquisition. And I specified, like, by high profile, I mean, you know, it's a big company. It's not some sale of technology. I was thinking it was actually going to be like a much larger funded company acquiring somebody. And sure enough, big congrats to Dan Norris and his team, because WP Curve looks like they were acquired. I think they announced it on around December 7th.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations to Dan and the entire team for that. But I also want to point out here that acquisitions were one of my predictions from the previous year. So technically we're both right on this one, I think.
That is really funny. Someone asked me, yeah, because so you predicted for 2016, which technically we're still in, that there would be more acquisitions than IPOs or something. And then my prediction really is for 2017, but I think it counts. As soon as we make the prediction, as soon as you make it, I think if it happens after that, then you're correct. So
Right.
It was pretty cool. It was cool to hear that news, not because it made the prediction correct, but just because of all the work Dan's done building his businesses and sharing with kind of the world of his experience and writing 7 Day Startup and his content marketing engine book. He's just done a lot of stuff. And now he's on doing Black Hops Brewing, right? He started an entire beer brand, like a microbrew in Australia. So
yeah, he started that a while ago. He was still running WP Curve. So it's been interesting to follow those things. One of the other predictions that somebody had pointed out was that I had a wearables prediction for last year, and apparently Pebble decided to shut down and sell off all their IP. So I think at the time that we recorded the episode, we hadn't been aware of that, but that's another one. And then you also had an unmanned drone delivery previously happened as well, and that happened about 2 weeks or so after we recorded the episode. So
yep, it looks like December 14th or something. So right there in time. I mean, they're talking in New Zealand about how it's like Domino's Pizza is going to start doing unmanned drone deliveries. And then Amazon did one in the UK, and it was literally December 14th. Amazon completes its first drone powered delivery. So I think this was yesterday. It's kind of interesting timing. I guess these things are, I don't know, I wouldn't call them obvious. It's funny, our recent, you know, predictions in the past, a lot of them never come true. And then, you know, we make a few predictions here and like two or three of them come true within 2 weeks. It's really, really odd.
And I do want to say congratulations to Christoph and Benedict for selling out FemtoConf in Germany. And this was on my list of predictions as well, that more of these types of things would be popping up. But to be fair, I knew about this one in advance, so I don't know if we can really count that as part of a valid prediction.
Very cool. So what are we talking about today?
So today what we're going to do is we're going to do a business model breakdown of Amazon Go. And if you're not familiar with this, we'll link it up in the show notes, but you can go watch a video from Amazon that talks about their Amazon Go store. And essentially it's a new type of convenience store that doesn't have any cashiers. There's no checkout lines. There's not even a self-checkout aisle. You just walk in, pick up your stuff, and it recognizes who you are based on when you checked into the store. And it keeps a virtual shopping cart for you while you walk through the store and pick things up. And if you put something back, it takes it off your shopping cart. And then when you leave, it just bills your Amazon account and automatically charges you through that account so that they don't have to, you know, swipe credit cards or anything like that. First reason I wanted to talk about this was because it's a little bit different than something that we typically talk about. Typically, we talk about things in the self-funded or, you know, bootstrapped entrepreneur space. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about a business that doesn't necessarily directly relate to the things that we do on a day-to-day basis. But the other piece of it is being able to objectively look at business ideas. And part of that is when you're evaluating your own business ideas or your own products and trying to get into different markets, being objective about those instead of, obviously you want to be optimistic about the things that you can accomplish and achieve, but at the same time, you also need to maintain a certain amount of objectivity and be able to recognize where problem areas are. And I thought that by digging into some of the pros and cons and areas where Amazon Go might have some issues getting to market or where things will work out in their favor or not based on the advantages and disadvantages that they have, that you can kind of extrapolate those things and be able to more objectively look at the things that you're working on in your day-to-day or, you know, month-to-month.
Yeah, and I think it's a good exercise to run through a business model like this, something that someone who's trying to innovate on the model, in essence. And I also think that it's just a nice way to kind of wrap the year up. It's a fun little diversion to talk about something as interesting as this that, you know, is essentially a big company really trying to turn retail on its head. A big company that, while we think of them as a retailer in quotes, because they're e-commerce, they really don't do much in terms of brick and mortar, and they're trying to figure out how to automate all the things. And I think that's a pretty admirable goal. So let's dig in. By the way, if you haven't watched the video, it's a 2-minute video. I really do recommend that you go check it out, because I was blown away by just the coolness factor of walking into this thing. And you walk in, you push a button on your phone, which I'm sure it's an Amazon Go app or whatever. Push a button to let it know you're in the store, and then you just walk around, grab some stuff, and you put it in, you know, your bag or whatever, and then you just walk out, and it charges you. Like, this is where Amazon has innovated in such an incredible way. Online is the one-click checkout and Amazon Prime, where you don't have to think about shipping. I spend so much at Amazon, I imagine that they're going to name a wing, an entire building, after the Walling family here pretty soon. So, and it's because of that innovation, right? It's the one click, no think. I just know that it's going to come and it's going to arrive from them. And I think that's the same thinking going into here, is they're just trying to remove all friction for buying stuff. And anytime I think about going to the store, I think, am I going to have to wait in line? You got to whip out this archaic piece of plastic that's been around for 30 years. And it's slow, it works most of the time, and, you know, on and on and on. Whereas it's like, if I can just be in and out, I think it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, so to give a little bit more background about this, there's one pilot store for the Amazon Go idea that's currently located in Seattle, Washington. It's only open to Amazon employees, and there's not really any public information about a wider rollout. They've talked a little bit about possibly having as many as a couple thousand of these throughout the United States between 2017 and 2020, but they're real sketchy on the details. And, you know, it's not really clear when this pilot program rolled out, but the idea is that it's a small store. It's only about 1,800 square feet, which is larger than the typical convenience store in the United States, but it's also much smaller than a regular grocery store, which is anywhere from 45,000 to 60,000 square feet. So it really fits into that convenience store market. And as we go through these, we wanted to talk about a bunch of different areas. But the first question that I think we wanted to ask was, why would Amazon want to do this? Is this just a PR stunt, or is this something that's really viable? And as we talked about very early on, if you had looked at their advertisements for the drone technology 3 years ago, you would have looked at it and said, well, it's been 3 years. It's still a PR. It's just a PR stunt. But, you know, we talked about that right at the beginning of the episode. They just did their first unmanned commercial flight. So it's interesting to look at this and say, well, they've got this idea. They know it's going to take them several years. And that's why they're working on this pilot store. And I think that that's a fascinating way to start. And I think that it's very analogous to the way that entrepreneurs will start rolling out products and work with a few individuals or trusted people that they can rely on for feedback and get that feedback that they need, innovate, figure out what the kinks are, work those things out, and then roll it out to a wider audience. It really seems to me like that's what Amazon's doing. I don't think that this is a PR stunt. I think that they really believe in this. Now, will it actually work out in the end? Who knows? We'll see. But, you know, it looks to me, all indications are that they fully believe in this and they're trying to work out the kinks right now. And that's why they're using their employees to do that.
Right. I mean, I don't see it as a PR stunt as much as a proof of concept, right? An MVP, where I bet they've been in labs working on this for a while, for a year or two, trying to figure out the technology. They say that they're using like visual recognition and all this other stuff. I'm thinking, you know, can you just use NFC based, you know, from your phone or Bluetooth or something like that? But maybe that's just impractical. I'm obviously not super up to speed on all that stuff. But, you know, why wouldn't this be viable, I think? Like, what's the biggest concern that you'd have in building this? It's if someone's going to come in and steal a bunch of stuff, right? I mean, that's the big thing. That's why you have someone in a store, is to make sure people don't just come in and walk away with the stuff. And the question is, do we think Amazon has the engineering prowess and the money to fund this, to make that not happen? And I think they do. I think that if in order to get into the store, if you have to push this button on your phone or it doesn't let you in the store, then now they know who you are. And so if you went and stole a bunch of stuff, why can't they just charge it? You know, I mean, that's the whole point. I guess if someone snuck into the store, you snuck a friend in, I just I think they're going to be able to figure ways around this. And that's why they're only rolling one out. And they're going to just see. And if that does happen, I bet they'll figure out, well, we do need a person on site at every store just to make sure people don't steal stuff. And at that point, they've figured out a lot of stuff. So do I think this is viable? Absolutely. I don't think it's a PR stunt. I think that Amazon has the, you know, they've gone from shipping normal retailers and or normal e-commerce sites where you think back 10 years, how long it used to take to get a book from Amazon. And it was whatever it was, a week, 10 days. And then they said, we're going to do everything 2 days as long as you pay for, you know, Amazon Prime. And then they have same day in a bunch of places. And now they want to go to basically instant, right? They want to go to where they can either deliver it directly to you, or you can just be walking down the street and kind of Amazon, you know, is everywhere. And it's interesting when you talk about it being a convenience store, because that's technically correct. But when I think of convenience store, I think of like Circle K or 7-Eleven, which is kind of a, I don't know, I'll just say a crappy convenience store. Like I don't tend to buy stuff at convenience stores, but the pictures they're showing here is of, it's almost like Whole Foods level quality stuff, right? It's like a high end, it's a convenient store with a lot of more higher end stuff that you or I would probably be more likely to purchase rather than hot dogs that have been sitting on a spinner for 6 hours and Slurpees.
Yeah. And I think that goes into the types of products that they're offering into the stores a little bit. But I kind of want to step back a little bit to one of the things you talked about was just the security of the place and dealing with things like hacking attempts and theft. And as you said, having that pilot store, doing that as a proof of concept and using Amazon employees, those people aren't going to be stealing from the store. They're going to be exercising the system. They're going to be trying to identify the edge cases so that they can work them out. I worked at Wegmans Food Markets back in the year 2000, and we actually rolled out an online shopping project for Wegmans, and it was only available in one store. It was a pilot program, and you could order your groceries online, and you would show up, and you would pick the stuff up, and it was, I think, $7, but it would save you an hour and a half to 2 hours of weekly food shopping. So if you had that extra $7 to spare, and you just wanted to throw it at it, you could just place your order completely online, and you just show up at a designated time. You tell them when you're going to show up, they'll bring it out, they'll put it in your car. You signed for, I don't even think you signed for it. Like they knew who you were. So, you know, you just basically walk away with it, which was fantastic because all of your information was tracked and they would, you know, I think they verified who you were, but that was it.
Sign me up. That sounds great.
It was fantastic. And it was different than some of the other online services where you would order it and then it would be delivered to you. This, you actually had to go to a store, but you literally told them when you were going to show up and they would have everything already. And they would have people go out and do your food shopping for you. So going back to the security of it, though, because they're having those people who are Amazon employees work in there and use the service itself, it kind of mitigates that particular problem, at least for now. It delays them having to solve that.
Well, and you have to bet that they have already tested and are going to have their employees test, try to steal something, like go do it. You know, like the white hat penetration testers, it's like, you know, even though their employees aren't going to do it intentionally, they're going to probably try to game the system and figure out where the weaknesses are before they let real people in.
So one of the other things that you had brought up was the types of goods there. So you had mentioned, you know, this kind of played back into your thoughts of what a convenience store was, you know, and you mapped it back to like 7-Eleven and various other types of stores. And, you know, I had a little bit of a conversation about this with my wife and, you know, after about 5 minutes or so, she totally tuned out, which is why we're having the conversation on the podcast so that I can talk about it with somebody else. But the idea...
So that our listeners can completely tune out.
So that our listeners can tune out, of course. But in this particular case, if you look at the different types of stores out there, you know, you'd mentioned like you probably don't want to go there and buy a hot dog, for example. And is that something that they would offer? My guess is probably not. It seems to me like they're positioning it more as something that, you know, you go in, you pop in there after work or something like that because you need something for dinner. You can buy pre-prepared meals and stuff like that and then just take them home and cook them. It's not pre-prepared, but like everything's pre-put together and you just basically take it home and cook it. And I feel like that's the type of arrangement that they're going for. One of the things that they wouldn't do, for example, is they wouldn't couple it with a gas station because there's lots of other things that go along with that. You have to have people there manning it in case something goes wrong. And in terms of the workers on site, I really feel like one of the challenges that they will have is that you still need to deliver stuff to the store. You still need to have like the shelves restocked. You still have to have things get pushed to the front. And there are some mechanical ways to do that, but you still have to have somebody on the back end kind of fulfilling some of those needs. I mean, logistics don't just take care of themselves. And you can automate a lot of that stuff with robots, but there's only so far that you can go with that kind of stuff. You still have to have somebody there doing something.
Right. I don't see this as being a store with zero people in it. It's probably a store with maybe 10% of the staff that you would normally need, or 20%, you know, some really reduced, drastically reduced numbers. Because if you think about what Amazon does, they do a really good job of cutting costs, right? I mean, that's been their big thing, is to drive costs down and get stuff to us very quickly. If you think about maybe the two guiding principles that Amazon has done since they launched in whatever it was, 94. So I think that's interesting to think about. You do still need to stock shelves, and eventually I could see them replacing that with some automated shelf stocking mechanism. I'm sure they have those in their big warehouses. But at first, I would bet they're going to have people in there doing it. And maybe at first they'll have someone at the front door making sure nobody without pushing the button gets in. And maybe they won't. I mean, that's where it comes with these. They'll run a pilot, and then it's like launching an app, right? Like, you run your pilot, you see what happens, you see what people like and don't like, you see what breaks, you see what needs to scale. And then I could see them automating things more and more over time, using human automation up front. And then with the big, you know, the 10x, 100x thinking Amazon has, I can imagine that long term, they could feasibly want to completely automate these stores where there are like zero people on site. But I would doubt that they would do that at the start.
Yeah. And in terms of the other logistics, I mean, you still have to get goods to the store. So there's a difference between shipping things to that location versus taking them in that location and then putting them on the shelves or making them accessible for the customers. At Wegmans, there was a fully automated and robotic warehouse where I forget how many thousand square feet it was, but it was just enormous. And they had, I think, two or three people there. And those two or three people were there solely to unload the trucks, put the pallets in certain places, and then machines would come and take everything and then stock it. And then when they needed something, they needed a pallet of, you know, whether it was frozen meat or, you know, what have you, they would just go over to a computer and hit a few buttons and boom, like the robots would basically go grab everything off of the racks and then pull it down and be able to deploy it so that the trucks could come in and pick that stuff up. It was fascinating that there was this massive warehouse and there was nobody in it. It was like a ghost town. It was a very stark contrast to one of the other warehouses that we had in place there. And I can see Amazon doing the same type of thing for not just inside the store, putting stuff on the shelves, but longer term, if you kind of look at the way technology is going, you've got driverless cars. You could theoretically have a truck pull up and drop a bunch of stuff off and then other robots that would move things around inside the store. But I question how soon in the future that's going to be. In terms of some of the technical considerations I've seen in this, like there are questions about the item attribution and tracking, and you had mentioned these a little bit in terms of like the near field, you know, techniques for identifying items, or maybe RFID or something along those lines. I can see a bunch of different ways that they could do that, but the question is, how feasible is it to do that at scale? And pilot program will really eliminate a lot of those questions, or at least get answers to them, and it'll help them figure out how to do things in the future. But I don't think that they're really concerned right now on scaling that stuff. They're just trying to figure out, how do we fix this problem, or where are the biggest problems that we have, and let's prioritize those. And once we get to a point where we think that those are low enough, then we can deploy this out further. And I don't see that as any different than launching a new application or a new product. I mean, you have to figure out where those problems are, and then you get to the point where you say, okay, now we can start scaling this up. We don't need a full-time support rep because we're not getting the tickets that you would if you launched it with problems. So one of the questions that comes up to me is that, like, what about the social implications of this? And you had said with, you know, like 7-Eleven, this seems like a more upscale version of it and, you know, kind of trends more towards the Whole Foods type of store. But what are your thoughts on the social implications of a store like this? Is this something that you're going to be able to make work in like urban areas, or, you know, does it have to be in a city? Like, you know, are people going to be used to that type of thing? Are they going to get themselves used to it? Or is it just something people are going to shun and say, no, I don't want anything to do with that?
I think just having the Amazon name on it, I mean, this is such a brand recognition thing. I think it'll be a novelty at first. And I think if I saw one, the first time you see one, just like the first time you saw an Apple store, it's like, I got to go check this thing out. And if it's a cool experience and it delivers on what they say, I don't see why you wouldn't go back, you know. But if that first experience is rocky, or maybe give them two chances or something. You know, I think it could be tough for them to gain traction, which I think is why they probably want to roll it out fairly slowly. I think that socially, this seems like just an urban thing, you know? I can't imagine rolling this out in a small town or something, but that's just me. Just based on, it's probably mostly based on the goods I saw, you know, in the ad itself. And it just feels like something that convenience and that speed and that transactional nature, I think fits cities really well. I mean, people don't, you know, necessarily want to take time to talk to the shopkeeper or whatever like they might in a small town. So I do think this would be more urban oriented. And I think there's plenty of room in terms of room for improvement in kind of the grocery space that I think this could be interesting. There's another implication here, and it's of jobs. You know, I mean, what about the jobs it will take away from people? And I think there's a whole conversation to be had around the idea of technology in general. It just takes jobs over time, right? It takes some and it creates them. It transforms is probably a better way to say it. It takes from lower skilled workers and it tends to create jobs for higher skilled workers. And so, you know, people protested if you recall, like the buggy whip manufacturers protested automobiles and they said there should be no more cars because they're bad or whatever, and it was going to put them out of business. And then there were a bunch of strikes when automated, like I think it was cotton gins came out, like all the women who had done that by hand for hundreds of years, there were like union strikes and all this type of stuff. And they said, these things are evil and it's going to take jobs and you shouldn't let them do it. And so, you know, you have to ask yourself this question, is that, should we not have those things? Should we not have those advancements? And, you know, and same thing with factory robots, right? That are putting stuff together. They do take jobs, then they create jobs for people who can program and maintain the robots. And, you know, they create other stuff. So I think that is a thought process. It's probably too deep into the weeds for you and I to specifically go back and forth on it in this particular episode. But I do think that's something that's going to start entering this conversation as they roll these stores out.
Yeah, but I think that the idea of displacing the jobs and really just moving those jobs from one place to another is something to kind of consider here, because it ties directly into where would you put these stores. And as you said, you know, you kind of would probably tend towards urban areas, not towards the rural areas. And the urban areas are where those highly skilled workers tend to congregate. And part of the reason for that is that they tend to get paid more. You know, the lower skilled workers don't tend to live in the cities because it's expensive to live there. And if you don't have good marketable skills that kind of demand that you get paid well for them, you can't afford to live there. So like, you can't afford to live in New York City if you don't make at least reasonably decent money. I mean, because New York City is way more expensive to live than other cities. So if you're essentially replacing the jobs of those workers and, you know, eliminating them, I mean, those people can't really afford to live in those cities anyway, for the most part. And not to say there aren't a fair amount of exceptions, but you're essentially displacing those skilled workers outside of the cities. So it also ties back into Amazon having this awareness or location information about where their customers currently are, because they're shipping to them already. So they know what their addresses are, and they could use that information to identify where is a good spot for a store. I know when we worked at Wegmans, I mean, they would spend a couple of years trying to figure out where is the next store that we're going to build. And they would get all this demographic information from people, public sources, try and figure out how much money do people make in this area? Is this going to be a profitable store? Is it going to be a place where we're going to lose money or we're going to have to shut it down? We're not going to be able to do as many things as we want. Or are we going to be able to charge the prices that we want? For someone like Amazon, if they can look at the average revenue per user of a particular area, and they know all this data around those people that says, hey, these people spend a lot of money with Amazon, let's put a store right in the middle of them, chances are good those people are going to shop there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of Amazon. It has your home address, right? And so they know the location of the people who probably spend the most on Amazon or who buy high-end things. And I mean, they have big-time information advantage over their competitors. I think one of the other like social implications, you know, that I didn't bring up when you were asking about that is that the store essentially requires you to own a smartphone. And that has some implication in terms of the income level of the audience, you know, which is why, or the potential customer. And I think that's another one they're thinking about. They're just basically saying that is a requirement, and they know that there are so many people with phones who are willing to spend the money that I think that's probably a good bar to have.
Right. One of the actual challenges with like a grocery store of any kind is that the margins on grocery stores, on goods that you buy at a grocery store, tend to be really thin. They don't make a lot of money on most of those goods. And they also have to deal with what's called shrink, which is generally referred to as stuff where the goods are just damaged or, you know, like food spoils, stuff like that. Those types of things count against the margins that you would make on most of the goods there. And I think that because of they're targeting at people who have smartphones. Those people are going to tend to be better off and financially and are going to be able to spend more money. And they're going to be willing to spend a little bit of extra money in order to get the additional convenience that I think a store like this would operate. So in a way, that disadvantage, you look at that and say, well, you can only target these people. Well, those people have money. And that's not necessarily a bad thing that you're targeting those people with money.
You know, one thing I think Amazon's doing really well here is they're leveraging their brand. And I think if you think about what are the parallels in our space, think about someone like, you know, a Brennan Dunn who has an email course and then an ebook and then a video course and then a conference. And think of, you know, startups to the rest of us. And now it has the Academy and I wrote a book and you wrote a book and we have MicroConf and we've kind of leveraged the trust people have in us. There's a lot of examples of this online, but I think that's something that Amazon has as an advantage is that if you know, imagine if it wasn't Amazon doing this. And if we heard that a brand new company raised, you know, $1 billion in venture funding and they want to roll these out across the country. A, we wouldn't be talking about it on this podcast because it just wouldn't be notable. And you'd be thinking, this is never going to work, right? Because I don't necessarily trust the brand. I don't know, are they going to be able to pull this off? Whereas it's with Amazon, it's like they have deep pockets. They do things really well. They make things work that seem like they're not going to work. And frankly, I buy so dang much from them that like, for me, it's kind of a no-brainer to at least consider and at least give them a shot. And I think leveraging that trust and kind of that brand recognition is something that is going to do really well for them here.
The other thing that it gives them is that the fact that they're Amazon, they have all these resources that they can bring to bear on it to solve all the smaller issues so that when they do scale it up, they have those issues taken care of. But you had just said, well, what would happen if this was some unknown startup who raised $1 billion? I mean, my first thought would be Webvan, which, you know, they rolled out $1 billion infrastructure back in the year 2000 and the whole thing collapsed on them. They just couldn't make it work because the margins on groceries tended to be so low and so they couldn't get all the delivery stuff taken care of. But by doing that pilot program, by concentrating on one thing and leveraging their existing resources, which essentially provides them a runway. I mean, they've got billions of dollars coming in on a regular basis, and they can experiment with this one thing over here and see if it works, see if it's something that they think is going to be able to turn into something big down the road. And if it's not, it's not a big deal. But if it is, then they can kind of put gas on the fire and push it for, you know, whatever they can get out of it in order to make it a long-term profitable thing that they can roll out nationwide. And that's really the key thing here is being able to leverage your previous successes to future successes and make sure that you're doing things carefully in a way that allows you to experiment without breaking the bank. If you don't have that runway of some kind, you're really just rolling the dice. And it seems to me like Amazon is doing a lot here to hedge their bets.
All right. So to wrap us up, what are the chances that you give this, that they roll this out and they roll out thousands of stores and it becomes a big success?
Thousands of stores?
Is that the prediction? It's like 2,000 stores by 2020?
Yeah, it wasn't real clear. Like those are kind of guesses that I've seen online.
Got it. So maybe just say critical mass, whatever that means, that in most major cities, when you and I go, maybe it's not Starbucks level of on every corner, but that it becomes a viable thing, like, you know, maybe however many Apple stores there are, you know, that there's that many Amazon stores.
Yeah, I could see that happening. And I could see that happening within probably the next 4 or 5 years. Whether they get to 2,000 stores in the next 3 years, I don't see that happening because there's a lot of competition out there. I could see them approaching certain types of stores that are already in place and offering to essentially replace them, go to the management, say, hey, would you like to convert this into an Amazon store? But, you know, Amazon also likes to maintain control. So, you know, I'm not so sure that they would really want to do those types of partnerships. They would really just want to say, hey, we'll buy you out or we'll take over your space or something along those lines. They're going to have to figure out what their profit margins on each of those stores are per square foot and find places where it really makes sense for them to do that in a way that can undercut competition around them and help make sure that the place stays in business. I say this is better than even odds. I'd probably say 60 or 70%. I'm hesitant to go higher than that, but given Amazon, I'm also very hesitant to go less than 50-50 on it.
Yep. I think it's going to work. I am bullish on anything Amazon tries to do in terms of their ability to execute and do crazy, big, hairy, audacious things. So I think that we will before long be seeing Amazon stores in a major city near you. And that wraps us up for the day. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.